Government Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, theology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Evident Footprints here on bbsradio.com. It is the 18th of March on the East Coast, and it's still the 17th of March on the West Coast. As I always say, you're about 3 hours younger, but eventually you will catch up to us. In the meantime, we have some wonderful shows scheduled for the following 2 weeks. We are going to be focusing primarily on matters of a spiritual nature, matters pertaining to universal consciousness, and we are going to be talking, I think, quite a bit about disclosure, whether or not we are being visited or have been visited or will be visited by people. I will call them people, from other realms, other planets, other galaxies, and possibly other parts of the universe. And so we have some wonderful shows coming up at this time, Monday through Friday, for the next 2 weeks. You don't want to miss a single one of them. I would like to thank all the wonderful people who sent me email regarding either my website, shows that we've had on, guests that they would like to hear on the program. And Evident Footprints is about bringing the truth to you. And I would like to acknowledge one particular email that I got from Stephen, who has his own website. And I want to give this website out. I think you're going to find some interesting things there when you spend a little bit of time. This gentleman is obviously awake. I don't know much about him yet, but I hope to strike up a friendship with him. He is interested in truth, and his web space is a MySpace website, www.myspace.com/thewave1111, or you could say the wave 1111. He's got four ones in a row. I paid a visit to that site on his invitation, and I was pretty impressed with what he has there, and I encourage that you go there. Also, I encourage you to pay my website a visit, directlightproductions.com, and you don't need to put the www in front of that. It'll take you right to the site without the W's. I like to leave the 666 out of my web address, if at all possible. And amongst the new additions on my site, I have added some photographs, photographs of Mars and some other planets. And we show the cities that are on Mars. I think you'll find those interesting. Some of that information came from MarsAnomalyResearch.com. Actually, these are photographs released by an employee at the European Space Agency, evidently our own NASA, whom we pay for their research, doesn't feel we deserve to see the fruit of our labors. So we thank the unnamed lady with the European Space Agency for forwarding those pictures and then having an in-depth study being done on the MarsAnomalyResearch.com website. And we're appreciative of that. I noticed since I posted those pictures, I'm getting lots of hits on the site. It's either NASA and the NSA or it's you listeners out there. I'd like to think it's the latter. Anyway, our guest tonight was referred to me by Rick Nelson, who was on the show earlier in March, or I think the end of February. The days seem to be running together and time is speeding up. But Rick was scheduled to be on the show tonight, and he couldn't. However, I intended to invite this gentleman anyway, and he was available, so we filled Rick's slot. We have with us the MUFON International Director of Public Education, or you could say Public Relations. He is also heavily involved in research on paranormal phenomena, and he hosts a website called PhenomenaTelevision.com. I visited that site and got to see a very interesting TV show that he produced a video of. He is seen on public TV in the Denver, Colorado area. Those of you in Colorado should look for his show, and he'll be talking about that in a couple of moments. And with that, I would like to invite for the first time to bbsradio.com and Evident Footprints my guest for the evening, Alejandro Rojas. Good evening,
Hello.
Alejandro.
Good evening. Thank you.
How are you feeling these days?
I'm feeling pretty good. Feeling pretty excited. Like you said, time seems to be moving extremely fast, and so you have to adapt and change constantly, but I think I've learned how to do that okay, and it's exciting. These are exciting times.
Yes, I often remark when we get into these discussions about time that my atomic clock seems to be running slower than my computers. And my computers, which are Macs, keep excellent time. I think they vary 1 second every 3,000 years, something like that, if you got a good motherboard.
Right.
And the atomic clock is having trouble keeping up. So something strange
is going on. They're tuned a little
better. Yes. Well, tell us a little bit about yourself, Alejandro. Before we get into any topics, I'd like the listening audience to have a feel for who you are and how you got where you are. I mean, you have a pretty important responsibility with MUFON, not to mention the other research you're doing.
Right. Yeah, that's definitely my biggest responsibility, especially at a national and even international level, which is very exciting, which is to represent MUFON in interviews such as this, and also to work on being sure that we communicate well with media and get them what they need, as well as try to promote ourselves within the media, but also promote ourselves elsewhere by doing presentations at various conferences or trying to meet any request where someone calls us and says, hey, you know, I live in this area and I would like to have a speaker on this subject. Do you have someone in the area? So we get those people together and coordinate and get that going. And we have such a variety. You know, a lot of people have their own concept of what MUFON is, but MUFON really isn't one thing. It's a bunch of individuals and a bunch of individuals that have a wide variety of perspectives and opinions on what's going on in this arena. But they're people who are open. They have their eyes open to a bigger reality that exists, and they're looking into and researching that. I've personally been a MUFON investigator for about 6 years, and luckily, you know, I've been able to interface with the international headquarters being out here in Denver, which is where the headquarters were located, and so luckily that visibility was able to get me into this position, and so far I think I'm doing an all right job, so they're keeping me around.
Well, I must be doing an all right job because my MUFON connections are moving up the ladder.
So yeah.
I'm sort of joking. But I'm pleased to have you on the show, and I'm pleased to, you know, for Rick's recommendation of getting you on as a guest, he stressed that you have a wealth of experience and a really heartfelt concern for your work, and that's what we're about here. We want to get to the truth on a lot of topics that we discuss on Evident Footprints. And disclosure and ufology, the issue of alien races being here, visiting here, possibly attacking us, abducting us, mutilating animals and even people. I mean, these are all very real scenarios. Now, not that we're trying to fearmonger, but there are all these different aspects. And I'm sure in your work you decided to take the posture that you have because we don't have disclosure. We don't have a government that's willing to flat out come out and tell us the truth.
Right. And I mean, I work closely with, and a big hero of mine is Dr. Leo Sprinkle, who's a hypnotherapist who's been in this arena for a long period of time, and he's a great person to look up, and he's got a book up there, and I really resonate with his message. But when you bring up especially abductions, that's something that I found that's been a concern. It's been one thing that has really compelled me, because we do have a lot of these people coming to us with their stories about being abducted, and there's at least a couple cases where I've discovered there is pretty strong physical evidence related to these abductions. And so these stories are compelling, and I believe that they're real. And to have this happening to people, regardless of, you know, where they are in their stage with their experiences and how they feel about their experiences, to have this happening without them having any sort of official support, nowhere to go to, and even when they go to people like me or like others in the field who are researchers, sometimes they're not even believed within those groups. So it's very difficult for these people who are going through these traumatic experiences and really need professionals to be there for them to help them through what they're going through. Mm-hmm. And even further, for the government to know this is going on, and, you know, some people believe, and there could be evidence out there that the government even could be facilitating this sort of thing, but at the same time, ignoring the victims is sort of tragic, and you know, there's got to be someone for these people.
Well, there's a lot of truth in everything what you say. From my perspective, I think the government would have to fess up that they made a big miscalculation in the very beginning when they struck the original deals they struck in terms of, and I'm speaking really way before the Roswell crash. You and I had a chance briefly to talk off air prior to your coming on the show, and I think we scratched the surface of my involvement with the Cape Girardeau case, which really didn't occur in Cape Girardeau, much like Roswell didn't occur in Roswell, and that they attacked the messenger as a means of attacking the message, and that's a method they use throughout anything that we challenge that they're doing. Any evidence that comes out to show that there might be an oil cartel conspiracy or a pharmaceutical company conspiracy, a mind control conspiracy, a weather control conspiracy, food, you name it. It seems like there's a conspiracy behind everything because they have an agenda. Now, their agenda is probably based upon the mistakes and the miscalculations they made when they sought technology from these initial groups that they made contact with. Would you agree with that, or?
Well, you know, I'd even go on in a general rule of thumb, whenever you seek to pursue power and things that are very ego-based and selfish, that you're always going to be, that's a miscalculation right from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And that's unfortunately what a lot of these people have done, and those are the people who are the ones who are in control or running, at least, you know, our society.
Mm-hmm. I agree. So you're basically agreeing with me.
Yeah.
And most of my guests on this show, so.
Right.
And probably with the listeners, too. Well, I thank you for that, for confirmation, anyway. Now, I've had the opportunity to meet Bruce Widemann, Earl Benezet. Bruce is state director for Missouri, Earl for Kentucky, Bill Jones in Ohio. And I've had conversations with other representatives of MUFON, from Jan Harzan, some email correspondence with John Schuessler, and some email and phone with Bruce Maccabee. And it seems to be some divided factions within the group, somewhat, and I think it's worth talking about because we find this everywhere. Everywhere there's a movement, there's either some infiltration or maybe just general discord. It's not necessarily conspiratorial, but nonetheless, some people think we should have disclosure, and some people think we shouldn't have disclosure. Now, I can't imagine what the most plausible reason for non-disclosure would be, and I don't buy national security as a reason, because we have non-disclosure and we have no national security. We have national insecurity.
Right.
On our borders, we have it in our economy, in our energy. We really have no idea what's in store for us unless we have a crystal ball from the Creator that's showing us everything that's going on. And,
yeah.
and those of us that are spiritually asleep are even in more dire straits, I think, because we weren't intended to be so limited as what this matrix has made us become, or what we've allowed it to make us become.
Yeah,
Go ahead. Go ahead.
With MUFON in general, I mean, to be especially a member and a representative, it's very clear, at least as a general organization, that that's one of our base beliefs, is that in disclosure. And if you go to our website, you know, we have those core goals, which are to research, investigate, and to educate the public. And so we have those three functional directors in charge of those three areas, my piece being the education, and then we have a bigger board. But as you noticed, and that's why I love to field these questions about MUFON, even the ones that are more difficult, because there is a wide variety in beliefs and opinions among MUFON members, and that's welcome and that's fine. I don't think you can find two people in this field that agree on everything. For all researching and trying to figure it out. So we do have a wide variety. I think you've probably found among all of those people definitely have varying opinions on different aspects of what's going on here.
Yeah.
And I think that is that's something that people need to know, that a lot of times maybe they'll hear something Bruce Maccabee's done. And Bruce Maccabee, I think, he's one of the great people to talk to the public. He does a good job on focusing them on the UFO issue, or even Stanton Friedman, who does the same. However, they're both very conservative. So you may have a case that you strongly believe in that they don't believe in. And sometimes people think, oh, well, then that represents MUFON. And that's not necessarily the case. The different opinions are welcome. But we all do work towards those goals to research, investigate, and educate the public.
Mm-hmm. Now, I bring this up not to create controversy nor to defame or speak badly of anyone. I think when there is an organization and you have people, there's going to be disagreement. There's going to be dissension on certain issues. I think there is a point where there is such a thing as infiltration, and the infiltration sometimes is the disruptive force behind it all.
Right. You know, there's been some great documentaries that have come out, and I can't remember the name of one in particular that I loved that was regarding, 9/11 and the aftermath and the Patriot Act especially, and the abuses of the Patriot Act, but it also did some investigation into police officers infiltrating peace organizations.
Mm-hmm.
And they would go in these peace organizations, they would go to their meetings and try to talk these guys into taking violent steps or doing violent things. And they would even go to the peace marches and pretend to be among the crowd and then start fights, or They even had video and were able to show that this was a police officer who was spraying the other people with mace to entice them into getting violent. I think, you know, you're right that unfortunately it's been a tactic that, I don't know, has been used at least since the 60s for these police organizations to infiltrate organizations and try to cause some of that strife and trouble from the inside.
Yes, and sometimes that the ulterior motive is eventually to provoke some kind of seizure of arms, of weapons, so that they can then enact martial law or just do a psyops test to see what provokes the strongest reaction, or, you know, how can they get the men angry? How can they get the women angry? How can they get everybody angry? And
right.
And then move in and under the auspice of maintaining the peace,
right.
which there never really is.
Well,
anywhere,
and,
you know.
And a case in ufology that I think is really interesting where this sort of thing happened, and unfortunately we get, MUFON gets associated with this gentleman, which we weren't at all and still aren't to this day, which is Richard Doty. And he's still big in ufology, a large figure, but he used to work for Air Force Intelligence, Special Investigations, and lots of disinformation cases that he worked on where he was the disinformation agent, and one of them being with Paul Benowitz, a gentleman in New Mexico who was getting into UFO investigations and taking pictures of things flying around the Albuquerque area and things like this. And so Benowitz, unfortunately, recruited Bill Moore, who had worked with Stanton Friedman on the Roswell and was a great ufologist, to help feed Paul Benowitz disinformation to drive him literally crazy. And unfortunately, they were successful. Benowitz went crazy. Bill Moore had second thoughts about his involvement, and then he tried to come out at a MUFON conference, and MUFON had told him he wasn't welcome, so he actually, and it's still believed that it was during this conference that he spoke at a MUFON conference, but it wasn't. He actually rented a room across the street from the MUFON conference, and that's where he spilled his guts about working with Doty, trying to feed this information to Benowitz, and another, it's, you know, one of those ugly stages, but at least it was revealing to see, you know, how these people work. And unfortunately, Doty's still out there, and people are still taking his word for much of some of the things that he's talking about that's going on.
That, I'm glad you mentioned that. You know, about midway through my research career, which began, 34 years ago, about 17 years into my research, I actually called Dr. Benowitz. I called him at his business, Thunder Scientific Research. Now, I got the information as to where he was and what company he worked for. That was his own research company, in fact, from some information that I had received in a whole packet of stuff that John Lear was putting out. Of course, I used my discernment on what I thought was real and what warranted some investigation, and I kept reading the Benowitz case, and what kept slipping past me was in the very first paragraph it said Paul Benowitz of Thunder Scientific Research. Well, then we didn't have the internet, at least not the general public. So I called information and got the number to Thunder Scientific Research, and I called and I asked to speak to him, and he came to the phone in about a minute, and I identified myself and assured him that I didn't belong to the government and I wasn't with an intelligence agency. And I said, you have no way of knowing that unless you listen to some things that I'm going to say. And I told him I was reading these things that I had gotten from John Lear. And I was interested in finding out if these stories were true. Had he made contact with Greys, who were living underground? Was he communicating via computer with them? And his first question to me before answering was, how did you get this number? It for some reason, he thought that should have been an impossibility. And I said, well, believe it or not, I called information. And they gave it to me. And then I said, are these stories true? And I said, if you're uncomfortable answering because you've been told not to talk about it, just say yes or no. You don't have to offer any information other than yes or no. And he said, he wouldn't even say yes or no. He said, I don't do that anymore. Hmm. Well, that's a yes.
All right.
Okay. So I thanked him. We talked for a few more minutes, and I became very interested in this aspect. I had seen craft as far back as 1966 over Lake Erie, growing up, still in school, at home, you know, living with the family, and then I had seen 8 craft over the Mediterranean in Via Reggio, Italy, and when we talked to Aviano Air Force Base the following Monday, they said, oh, there were no anomalies, nothing unusual, and I knew they were lying because we had seen this for a total of 1.5 hours. And there were 10 people witnessing this. We weren't seeing things. We were seeing crafts stopping on a dime, changing direction, 90-degree angles, zigzagging, doing loops, everything you can imagine. Wow. And now what was actually going on as far as their activities, I couldn't tell you, but we saw 8 discs. And so I became very interested in the topic. And I have talked to people like Stanton Friedman, George Norrie, Art Bell, Whitley Strieber, and many of the other fine researchers out there on a number of cases. Ray Fowler has done some interesting stories on abductions in New England. I had long conversations with him while he was up in the mountains writing his next novel. And most of the people, Jim Mars is another one, the good researchers and the authors out there, just have a knack for cutting through all of the fluff that they want to feed us about what's really going on. These people just meet this issue head on. And so there are some very, very serious researchers out there, very wise, shrewd researchers that know how to work the system. And they have more than corroborated the testimony of these abductees, like you're describing, and the other researchers that have looked into things like the cattle mutilations, the Linda Moulton Howes, for example, and the Bob Lazars that are talking about how they build the craft and how they study the craft. There are just too many stories that this can't be true. Now, I wanted to ask you, in terms of the other group that's out there, and I'm speaking about Stephen Greer's Disclosure Project, what is your take on that effort?
Well, personally, you know, especially in our phase right now of MUFON, and one of my goals is to always look to repair any bridges that have maybe gone unmaintained, but with Disclosure Project, for instance, I think that what Stephen Greer had done was phenomenal. You know, regardless of whatever else he talks about that people don't agree with, by putting together that press conference that he put together in 2001. At the Washington Press Club with all of those incredible people was historic and groundbreaking. And really, that press conference is what propelled me deeply. It created that compulsion that I've never gotten over to really study and delve into this subject. So what he did there was incredible, and his interview videos, you know, he's got the 2-hour and the 4-hour of all of these incredible witnesses and some of the things they have to say. I think that's absolutely amazing. I've met him at, the last time I got to meet with him was about a year ago. And, you know, just like everyone else, he's got his opinions on things, and he's got his opinions on some of the big power brokers in the world. And some of these are people that he is attempting to communicate with to try to get this information out. Although there's some people that are a little skeptical that some of these power brokers that he's approaching are really wanting that. I know a lot of people feel that some of these people he's approaching are some of the people who are keeping this information under wraps, so they're definitely not the right people to go to. But I admire his effort and that he's trying and he's going out there and he's getting things done. And I also have an interesting story about his contact protocol. Actually, my very first sighting after being an investigator for years was 30 minutes after using the CSETI protocol, which his other organization had come up with. And I thought that was interesting. I thought, you know, what the heck, I'll try it. I was out at the UFO Watchtower in the San Luis Valley where there are lots of sightings. We did this protocol, and sure enough, 30 minutes later was what I call my first UFO sighting, this very bright object about 30 degrees up just above the Sangre de Cristos, directly east of us, and it kind of coasted over, and when it got directly east of us, it very steadily faded out, and this was right as it was getting dark. And what was interesting is maybe 5-10 minutes later, it was completely dark, and behind us, directly behind us, to the left and the right, the north and the south, there were what appeared to be satellites coming straight towards us. And they crossed directly above the area where we had this sighting, directly east of us. So, of course, were they satellites? They looked like satellites. They moved in a steady pace, in a constant direction. They didn't move direction or change speed at all. And they were, you know, star-like objects, but that was certainly an experience for me and my sister who was there, and luckily the owner of the watchtower, Judy Meseline, was also present to witness that with all of us.
That's interesting. Now, that's a positive experience. Now, there are some cases that I've studied. Some of them, the more interesting ones are had taken place in the mid-70s in Kentucky. And I came to meet Earl Benezet, in fact, through Bruce Widdeman while I was studying those cases. I think Kenny Young had, out of Northern Kentucky, I think he was from Covington, Kentucky, had done some interviews. You remember? You might remember the name Jerry Black, who was really interested in, I think, debunking the Gulf Breeze case. And Kenny had investigated a Hopkinsville, Kentucky case. I think it was from 1976. Three women who were going to celebrate one of their birthdays at a restaurant, driving through the country at night, and they were passed up by a saucer that stopped in front of their car. And then the next thing they remember, they're sitting out in their car, and they had forgotten the whole night. But very, very frightened, very scared, lots of missing time, at least 3 hours of missing time. And then the slow recollection of the usual probe stories, you know, the abdominal probes and the probing of their reproductive areas and things with their eyes and ears. I mean, you know, a pretty frightening experience, much like the one Travis Walton talked about. Also similar to the Allagash abduction that Ray Fowler was writing about in the book The Watchers. So these cases are pretty alarming, and I'm sure you've run into tons of those. They're not all... Go ahead.
Yeah, luckily, you know, just this last weekend, we brought Travis Walton to Denver, and actually our next episode of Phenomena Television, I'm going to be loading one episode tomorrow, a brand new one, but not this one, but next month's episode, we're going to air the interview that Rick Nelson did with Travis Walton. And then I was at the UFO Congress just recently, a couple of weeks ago, and actually this episode is a lot of interviews from that Congress, and I got to meet and spend some time with the Allagash guys.
Oh, so, wow.
which was a pleasure because they're really neat guys. They're just such down-to-earth, really neat guys. And their talk was just wonderful. And it showed to me, because it was very popular, their talk, just how, you know, we get all of these ufologists and researchers and authors to come up and do presentations. But people are fascinated with just the average person talking about their experiences, like the Allagash and Travis Walton, because they're very down-to-earth people you can talk with. So, yeah, you know, and I think I know what you're kind of getting at with the disclosure thing, too, because I personally am also working on another case and have been for a few years, which has some pretty substantial physical evidence. And I'm convinced... especially with this case, as well with others, but especially we have more physical evidence with this case that that people are, for lack of a better word, you know, I'm friends with this gentleman now, so I call it milking, that they take him and, you know, they extract semen from him, and I'm confident that there, he has been a party to this hybridization that seems to be going on for whatever reason. So I'm convinced that it is happening. For what reasons, I don't know. But I did try to approach that subject with Greer, but he certainly wasn't open to the idea. But what was interesting is that when he came out, they were able to meet Greer and in Boulder, Colorado, and this gentleman whose case I've been working on, who Greer was aware of. And while they were standing in a circle, there was a UFO that half the people in the circle saw, you know, under the clouds. It was a cloudy day. Mm-hmm. This light that flew under the clouds and then up through the clouds. And, of course, what was interesting about that is Greer thought, you know, they had seen that thing, sighting, because he was there. And then, of course, the case I'm working on, he thought it was because of him. And he does. There, you know, people have sightings. I've had sightings around this guy. You know, there are those people, especially abductees, that they seem to be flying around a lot. But who knows who was really responsible for that one. It could have been a combination of both. But it was that was an interesting experience as well.
Well, you know, if Jimmy Swaggart would have been there, I'm sure he would have claimed
right, exactly.
Credit.
It was an angel.
And definitely Al Gore. He'd have been arm wrestling Jimmy Swaggart for that one.
So far, those are the only two I know that tried to take credit for it, though.
Yeah, these are fascinating cases. Now, while you're talking about that, what's springing up for my consciousness? Last week, actually 2 weeks ago, I did two nights of Phil Schneider's speech in Idaho back in 1995, where he described in great detail what was going on at the Dulce base and pretty much around the world. He was familiar with the locations of most or all the bases, mm-hmm. Especially the ones he had worked on, as well as the tunnel systems. And he had some evidence that there were things going on other planets. And this really ties in with the fact that these groups came from other planets. They came from other realms, and they had less than benevolent intentions for us. And they basically tricked our governments into allowing them to remain here. I don't think they could have stopped it anyway based on the technology. So their interest was to gain technology from these groups, and these groups' interest was to gain our DNA and our body parts. And that has been documented countless times over and over again throughout history. So this is not a new phenomenon, yet they act as though it's not happening, particularly our government. Now, you know of other governments such as Mexico and Brazil, I'm sure, and maybe Argentina or Peru that are opening up tremendously and revealing the truth to the people. How is it that we can become so dumbed down in the society here in the United States that we don't accept this, that this is still considered fiction? Is it the movies or TV?
Well, I think, Rick, for instance, was in naval intelligence and talks about how the very first thing that you do when you go into a country is you take over their media, their radio. And media plays the role it plays in society, I think, is really played down. It's extremely important, and it really essentially creates our reality, especially if you talk to most people and ask them why they think what they think, or you get into any sort of conversation, the conversations often go back to television, and often they'll bring up, well, case in point is what happened on House the other day, or what I saw on CSI the other day, and they're referencing these fictional references that aren't reality. And even when they reference the news, I don't think, an interview, and this is going to be on our New Phenomena television episode that I'm loading tomorrow, I interviewed Richard Dolan about disclosure, and he referenced a study done by the University of Colorado in Boulder. And their study was the media, and to find out how accurate it was. And what they found was the people who watched the most news knew the least about the war in Iraq. They had the worst facts.
Yes.
Which frightened, the people doing the study. But as he noted, it might have frightened the people doing the study because they thought, media is supposed to be accurate, but not necessarily true. If the media's goal is to get viewers, well, they're doing a pretty good job with that. And I think that's what people have to realize, is that accuracy is completely secondary, if a concern at all. The viewership is a concern. So it's, I think, it's very easy, especially when you think of, there's 12 different companies, and I think you can even bring those down to less, that own our media, that it would be very easy to kind of hide things or just not talk about things. And the UFOs especially is one of those cases. And that's what's fun about right now is I think we're, I'm going to talk in Roswell, and that's going to be the focus is awakening the sleeping giant, and that sleeping giant being the United States media. I work with Paula Harris, mm-hmm. and I just, one of the interviews also that we're going to have out is Santiago Ituria, who worked with Jaime Musan in Mexico. And mm-hmm. they talk about the other countries being open and being very open. And sure, they are. In Mexico, they say they never get trouble. The authorities, one of their big cases of this creature that jumped on this police officer's car and flew away was from the police. Another big case was the Mexico FLIR UFOs that the Air Force, Mexican Air Force, had gotten. So their government's very open to this stuff. And Paula Harris, who's an international ufologist, talks about all these other countries being open to it. So countries are very open, but the big one is the U.S., because the U.S. is, for better or worse, a worldwide authority. People look to the U.S. People are watching our media constantly, and so they look to us, and then this is the hardest and the egg to crack. But, I think the biggest challenge is always the funnest, and I think eventually the egg will crack, but the powers that be have definitely done a very good job at, like you said, dumbing down the people and making them focus on Britney Spears' underwear or lack of, as opposed to some of the real things going on.
You sound like you heard some of my archives. I call them the blonde bimbos, and I go through the laundry list of all of them. They're all blondes, too, by the way.
That is interesting.
Yeah, and it's interesting you mentioned Roswell, because about 2 seconds before you did that, I pulled up a document called the Report of Air Force Research Regarding the, quote, Roswell Incident. July 1994. Are you familiar with that report?
You know, the Air Force has had several reports, so I can't remember which one in particular that one is.
This is the most recent disclaimer about the event.
With the dummies. And
I'd like to just read the opening for you, if I can impose upon you for a moment. This is an executive summary. The Roswell incident refers to any event that supposedly happened in July 1947, wherein the Army Air Forces, or AAF, allegedly recovered remains of a crashed flying disc near Roswell, New Mexico. Now, they've already disinformed. There were two discs, at least, and they weren't in Roswell. Okay?
Right.
In February 1994, the General Accounting Office, now get this, we're broke, we're financially bankrupt in the United States, but they gave this responsibility to the General Accounting Office. Acting on the request of a New Mexico congressman, initiated an audit to attempt to locate records of such an incident and to determine if records regarding it were properly handled. Although the GAO effort was to look at a number of government agencies, the apparent focus was on the Air Force, SAF AAZ, as the central point of contact for the GAO in this matter, initiated a systematic search of current Air Force offices as the central point of contact for the GAO in this matter, initiated, as well as numerous archives and records centered that might help explain this matter. Research revealed that the Roswell incident was not even considered a UFO event until the 1978-1980 time frame. Prior to that, the incident was dismissed because the AAF originally identified the debris recovered as being that of a weather balloon. Subsequently, various authors wrote a number of books claiming that not only was debris from an alien spacecraft recovered, but also the bodies of the craft's alien occupants. These claims continue to evolve today, and the Air Force is now routinely accused of engaging in a cover-up of this supposed event. Now, there are many deletions of information just from that first paragraph. Mm-hmm. If you remember, they said weather balloons, then crash dummies.
Right.
8 years later? Mm-hmm. 8 years later, they said crash dummies. There's no reference to that. Now, this is the type of obfuscation and deception and concealment. By the way, they make statements further on in this report, and I'm not going to read the whole thing. It's like 12 pages long. They say that there's nothing about UFOs or flying saucers that the Air Force doesn't understand. What kind of statement is that?
Yeah, is that's that an interesting statement.
Is that a denial, or is that an acknowledgement that they've studied them and they do understand them?
Mm-hmm.
And that possibly they make them, they manufacture them, and fly them.
Right.
Okay.
I think big one that they're, you know, left out was that, well, what reopened the whole thing really was Jesse Marcel, the guy who did find the debris at first, coming out and saying, well, no, that wasn't a weather balloon that I saw.
Mm-hmm. We had an instant cover-up. I have a copy of the ABC News broadcast of that event, and the next day they made them put out a disclaimer on it. They
right.
do the same things today, so this is not something new.
Yeah.
And we must realize that back in 1947 is when they brought the old German Nazi SS, the Abwehr, to the United States, and they made it the OSS, which stands for the other SS, and then the CIA. So this was already a planetary control mechanism and orchestrated by, under Truman, by MJ-12 from the beginning.
And another thing that it brings to mind is Admiral Hillenkoetter, first director of the CIA, and possibly, if not probably, one of the first MJ-12 members, but before he was MJ-12, or possibly he was coming out and talking about his concern about the Air Force hiding information about UFOs, and he was very outspoken about UFOs and the Air Force concealing information and keeping information from the public, and maybe that was one of the ways they were able to keep him quiet later, was by making a whole part of the system.
Yes. Now, you mentioned Rick Nelson. Rick would know that the UFO phenomenon, flying saucers, alien technology, aliens, the whole ball of wax is really under the auspices of the Office of Naval Intelligence, if I know my ufology. It has nothing to do with the Air Force in that sense.
Well, you know, I know there's a lot of that, and it's difficult to find naval connections. You find pieces here and there, but but like you're saying, it does seem that that is the case. One of the things I like looking into, because they're local, is Space Command, which is headquartered out of Colorado Springs, just outside the gates of NORAD.
Yes.
And NORAD being a facility, and then also another top-secret facility just east of Colorado Springs there. So we've got a lot of Space Command. And Space Command, if you look at their verbiage and look at even their insignias, talk a lot about having spacecraft and having expeditionary forces in space and their goal being the mastery of space. Even in their almanac, they talk about how their goal is to be prepared and to fight any enemy in or from space. So it seems to allude to the Air Force even having some sort of space-faring vehicles. But as far as the elaborate vehicles that seem to be out there, a lot of people refer to the Navy.
What's interesting, you're right there. What's interesting is these nuclear tunneling machines they have that drill 7 miles a day into mountainous regions, or just basically they're converting the dirt to glass walls underground,
right.
As they're building these underground bases and these underground tunnels. That machine, which was built by the RAND Corporation, has a U.S. Air Force insignia on it.
Right.
Yet the bases, the entrance to many of the underground bases have been seen by civilians and abductees alike, as well as whistleblowers who describe the ONI and the triangular signs or emblems that are on these signs, which is alien design or alien meaning, alien origin, designating that as one of their territories. Particular case I read, which was taking place in Cameron, Missouri, I believe it is. And there were two young men on ATVs who had ridden down a hill, and they described making a quick left turn at a point where the road or this path just ended. They saw a strange emblem on the surface they were riding over before they entered into this tunnel, and they thought they were going to crash, and they ended up going straight through the wall, miraculously going straight through this wall, continuing then back down the tunnel and confronting a reptilian who shot one of the vehicles, destroyed the vehicle, and miraculously the guy got up and jumped on the other ATV and they took off. But they described seeing ONI signs. And, in fact, it said the sign had a designation, this area protected or this, it said, this area, U.S. Naval Protected Area.
Where was that? What state?
In Missouri. Now, I don't know where the Navy has ships in Missouri, but, you know, unless it's on on the Mississippi River. but this is inland in Missouri, and they were underground. They described going at least 800 feet and then down into the ground once they got underground. They descended at least 800 feet, they described. And, of course, they're never going to go back there. The thing shot a weapon at them, particle beam weapon, and totally destroyed one of the ATVs. Now that'd be a pretty traumatic experience, but they remarked about the sign. They thought it was a joke. What's the Navy going to be doing down here? How many ships do they have down here? Something to that effect. I'm paraphrasing what they said, but we have these cases, countless cases like that, where people have seen the naval signs. I find it coincidental that George Bush was in the Navy. I find it coincidental, really, it's synchronistic. There are no coincidences, that he also headed the CIA, and that he became president, and that there's a connection there. Definitely is.
Yeah.
And so we need to be looking at these things and understanding these things, that they want us to fear. It's quite possible that they have it in mind to stage a fake attack or stage an event, maybe a hologram of an attack, just to get us to submit to a one-world government, let's say. But we also know that there are battles going on in space and that there are benevolent beings here to help us.
Right.
And this is a secret, regardless of what this guy writes in this Air Force report about the official stand on Roswell. It doesn't matter what they say, what's happening, right, and what we know is a totally different thing. So our escape from this paradigm or this matrix is letting go of the belief of what they tell us and just go by what we know.
There was a last time I saw the guy, one of the lieutenants who helped write that report, and it was on a show that was featuring Colonel Corso, who was a colonel who had was in charge of nuclear missiles, worked at the Pentagon, had very high clearances, much higher than this lieutenant who wrote the Roswell book. And he's over here countering what Colonel Corso had said. But how would he have any clue? He didn't have clearances to know what Corso knew. And, of course, Corso is talking about the reverse engineering of some of that technology that they got from the Roswell vehicle. Huh. One of them.
Yes. Well, you mentioned Richard Doty, too. His name recently surfaced in the last year and a half, in regard to the Project Serpo information that was released by Bill Ryan and Victor Martinez.
Mm-hmm.
And that story was mirrored in the Close Encounters of the Third Kind movie.
Exactly, and you know, which was, you know, J. Allen Hynek was an advisor for Close Encounters, and you know, it seems it lends to that maybe Spielberg or Hynek did know of some program that was somewhat similar. And with all this information, you know, there's bits of truth, and it's hard to determine what percentage is truth and what percentage is not truth. But it is interesting that perhaps there was a program like in Close Encounters, but I personally, because of the track record, would be hesitant to take Doty's word for all of what had happened.
Yes, I'm inclined to agree. The reason I shared my particular story about Paul Benowitz, that doesn't really prove anything other than Paul Benowitz sounded pretty reasonable to me, and he admitted that he had been doing that research.
Yeah.
So he verified the story. This is not a fiction. This is a true story. In fact, he was very concerned how I got his number on the basis of what we talked about.
It was Benowitz's research which started the whole Dulce actually. He was the first to, with working with actually Dr. Leo Sprinkle, to talk about a base under the Archuleta Mesa.
Mm-hmm. Now, some of the cases that I have looked at are also have been looked at by Leo Springmeier, who was from Ohio. And I think he passed away, maybe 7 or 8 years ago, maybe a little bit longer than that. But he had worked with researcher Ted Phillips for quite a long time. And his research was then picked up by Hynek. And I think Hynek was the man who coined the term swamp gas. I guess we have swamp gas everywhere. We even have swamp gas where we don't have swamps.
Uh-huh.
They probably have swamp gas in Alaska, too.
So, yeah. Well, and he's another example about the Air Force and getting disillusioned, because he was hired by the Air Force, and the Air Force kept telling him, okay, tell the public what this was, this UFO that they say they saw. And they would make him go out there and say something, and he would say silly things like swamp gas and stuff like that. And he got frustrated enough where he's like, hey, no, I'm going to investigate these cases, and then I'll give an answer. You're not going to shove me out there and give answers anymore. And that's when the turnaround, and all of a sudden he became an advocate as opposed to a debunker.
Mm-hmm. Now, I recall something similar with Stanton Friedman, myself, and that was my early talks with him when I first had met him around the time I was doing the intuition, the intuitive part of the Cape Girardeau investigation that Bruce Whiteman and I conducted in 2000, late 2000 we did this, around Thanksgiving, in fact. I came up with a completely different location than what Ryan Wood had come up with, and I talked about MJ-12 to Stanton Friedman, and he gave me a lot of, oh, you don't really believe in that, do you? And then he came out with a book about MJ-12 a few years later.
Yeah.
I thought, how ironic this is, you know? Here I am, I'm promoting this, and I see it from a paranormal perspective, as well as from a historical perspective and a research perspective. And as brilliant as some of these men are as scientists, you know, nuclear physicists and quantum physicists, and they have these really, really staunch postures about how far they're willing to go with this. But then they do a complete turnaround at some point.
Yeah.
But do you think that is just that they finally get it and do the digging, or I don't know. It seems almost strange that someone that could be that convinced that, you know, on the basis of their scientific education, that these things cannot be true, that they're impossible.
Science-minded people, I think, can be like that. You know, they're very rigorous, and they need some substantial proof. And, you know, for instance, and people get frustrated with Stanton about that, where Stanton will say, well, you know, I don't believe this because of X, Y, Z, and that doesn't seem like it would fit for me. But if Stanton Friedman is saying, you know, I believe this is what's happened, then you can rest assured that he's going to have some very substantial evidence that's going to back up what he believes.
Yes.
And the MJ-12 book is a great example, because they did some exhaustive work, and they dug up some incredible stuff to show that this MJ-12 organization most likely existed.
Yes, and you know, and that brings up Ryan Wood's great research in the National Archives. He dug up some documents that referred to the Cape Girardeau crash, although they didn't name it as such in the documents. They referenced a southwestern Missouri crash, even though Cape Girardeau is in southeastern Missouri. They just have this way of misdirecting us so that we cannot somehow seem to sink our teeth into the facts. But when you have a metaphysical gift and you can find things on maps, or you don't even need maps, it's a different story. Now, Ryan told me some interesting things afterwards, and in fact, this was years later when I confronted him about my findings on that case. I said, you do know I found the crash site. And he said, well, when you mentioned Jackson, which is about 15 miles away, or a 15-minute ride that coincides with William Huffman's account, that I had a picture of the Jackson police. It explains why the Jackson police were in the picture, because that would have been the crash site. So I know I found the site. I found the lady who owned the property. She's still alive.
Does she recall?
Oh, yes. She thought it was a plane crash that night, but I had asked her a simple question. Did your husband come in the morning after the plane crash and describe missing six calves? I've told the story before on this show, so my apologies to my listeners if you've heard this story before. She looked at me shocked, and she said, how do you know about that? My husband came in that morning. It had rained the night before, which was also part of my reading. I said there was a violent thunderstorm. His craft was hit by a lightning bolt, crashed into the trees, and it wedged itself in the top of the hill. And that's exactly how they found the craft, from all the accounts that I was able to find, including three alien bodies, one hanging out of the entrance, and two had been ejected from the craft, already dead. One was still alive, I said. They gave me none of the facts of the case. They let me conduct the investigation, and after it was over, they started feeding me all the information they had. And some of the things I said is this has an association to something that went on in Roswell later on, and also Malden, there's an Air Force or Army Air Force base called Malden somewhere near here. There was a former Malden Air Force Base that had been closed down, I think, in 1938. And I had also told them I had a vision of a space battle there, right there, between flying saucers and airplanes at the Malden Air Force Base. It was eventually closed down. And I was just coming up with all these facts. Well, this lady corroborated everything about the thunderstorm, about six missing calves, and she said, the thing is, you'd have to pull your truck right here beside our driveway, and there was a swale of land below the driveway, some 15 or 20 feet. And she pointed over to a gate. She said that gate was locked that night, and it was locked the next morning, and there were no tire tracks in the mud. She says, when it rains like it rained that night, that fills up with water, and it's real muddy, and you can't even drive a truck in there. How did they get those calves off of our property, she said. We never found out who stole them. And I wanted to say, well, it was these little green men, you know. But it was corroboration that was the crash site.
Yeah.
Just all the activity she described up at the top of the hill, the searchlights and the police and military. They opened up an FBI office the next day in Cape Girardeau.
Wow.
They redacted all of the newspaper obituaries. Actually, the Sykeston newspaper had four or five different places where they had an account of this event. It was all redacted on the microfiche. Total black when you print it out. So something was covered up. Now, Do they cover up plane crashes? Well, 9/11 type, yeah, Pentagon type, they'll cover those up.
Right.
Shanksville, Pennsylvania, that'll get covered up. But way back in 1941, why would they cover up a plane crash? Why would they send a minister from Cape Girardeau 15 minutes at high speed to another location in blacked out windows, in a vehicle with blacked out windows? And then warn him, he didn't see this, don't ever talk about it. You know, under threat of his and his family's lives. That speaks volumes right there. And that story went all the way to the granddaughter, Charlotte Mann, who's alive today in Tyler, Texas, still talking about the case. So, now, that's a case MUFON doesn't talk about very much, as far as I know, even though I went with a MUFON state director. I can't seem to get MUFON people to listen to that case. That case is more significant than Roswell.
My guess would be mostly because Ryan Wood, who is affiliated with MUFON, in fact, his father is a board member of MUFON, because Ryan Wood is already all over that case. So I think that that's why other investigators don't get on it so much.
Yeah, even Ryan doesn't. it's only my opinion, but
yeah,
my opinion is I would think that he would spend more time. Now I understand he wrote about it, but
he wrote about it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's the focus in most of his lectures.
Yeah, I'm looking to see. I'm not asking for anyone to pat me on the back, but I was a critical part of that investigation, and I also discerned where they took the craft as well. And it's differing also from the National Archive records. Now, there is some mention of where these crafts were taken. You know, they spoke back then, it was Wright Field. It wasn't Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. It was Wright Field. And they have in their documents that they took it to Los Alamos Labs, which is not true. That's not where they took it. Now, they may have taken one of the bodies, but they did an autopsy up there at Wright Field as well. And they took the craft up there. So, it sounds like I'm beating a dead horse in a way. I'm just pointing out that there is so much concealment and deception about the whole thing.
Yeah.
And we're paying for this privilege.
Yeah.
We're being... Go ahead.
Yeah, and especially, yeah, with that, I think a lot of people also look for, and a lot of investigators like to look for the paper trail to back up that information as well.
Well, we mentioned MJ-12, and we're running out of time here, but we mentioned MJ-12, and we lost Secretary of Defense Forrestal at a time when he was pushing for disclosure of this whole mess. Early on, way before we got into the mess we got in with Eisenhower's agreement in 1954, we probably would have been able to do something about this on some level. Now, maybe we didn't have the technology, but we certainly had a lot more people than we had an alien presence at that time on this planet. And I would suspect that early on our government had already been infiltrated by these forces, and I think that's why we don't get disclosure here. Is we are the last bastion of freedom, and I use that term loosely, on the planet, and with all the might we have, especially militarily and in outer space, all this technology we have, you would think the people would, you'd think our leaders would say, well, we have this technology and there is a threat, but we can handle it. I don't think they're convinced that they can handle it because they've given over to the other side. That's my general take. What's your feeling on that?
Well, you know, I always like to look towards the positive, and I agree with you completely what you're talking about with our government. But I think that... I think all in due time that, we're learning lessons, and we're not the first planet, I think, to ever go through this this period of time where we've got to learn discernment and learn how to enter the cosmic neighborhood. And I do feel that there is a big role that is being played by the positive, benevolent beings that are around. And I think I have a positive feel for what's going to happen. Not that it's not going to be difficult, but that we will have help when the time comes. And I just, you know, just like in my field, that these people just make life more difficult for themselves, and they're not doing themselves any favors by, you know, resonating with the darker forces. It's very ego-based, and I think that they're going to find that a lot of the bets that they've made are not going to come through. And I think we're seeing that now. I have a feeling that right now a lot of these people who are playing these games are getting older. Their minds are failing them. Their bodies are failing them. And that things aren't working out the way that they thought they would. Almost like any great emperor throughout history who has to rely on their children who don't seem to be capable of handling, you know, what they did.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you understand. I'm sure you and I have talked long enough to know that I'm not trying to bring out the darkness
of this. Oh, yes,
yes,
yes.
Other than to address it and acknowledge that it's there. Because that opens the door now for us to move in future shows on all the positive stuff and the wonderment of where we're headed and what some of these solutions are going to be, as well as what we can look towards. I'm of the overwhelming conviction that we are headed for some glorious times, some marvelous times, adventuresome times. And this darkness thing will sort itself out. We've got to come to our individual responsibility of becoming awake and conscious. And as we do that individually, we are collectively going to do that along with the planet. And the new reality is going to be created by us. It's not going to be so much a battle that we have to fight. It would just be so much easier if they would just acknowledge what's going to happen and just allow it to happen.
I believe it's unpatriotic, a true democracy. It's vital that the public have all the information. And you're circumventing the basics of a democracy when you're hiding information from the public, then they can't make informed decisions.
Mm-hmm. Well, we are a republic, actually. and it's in our Constitution. And they have basically just run roughshod over the Constitution. But that's going to change. Well, in your next visit, you know, I would like to talk about... I know you're going to be doing this this Travis Walton interview. It's going to be posted up on your site.
Right, in about a month.
In about a month, okay.
Yeah.
And I know you can probably direct people to MUFON.com, I'm sure, as far as if they're interested
exactly.
in checking out MUFON.
Yep, in checking out MUFON, and also all the reports that we receive, including the pictures and the videos, are posted up there for the public to view.
Okay, and then you have phenomenatelevision.com is
exactly.
your website where they can
right.
Actually see your postings. There's an interesting
yeah.
one there, too. Now, I failed to mention that you really get into paranormal events as well.
Right.
And we can certainly touch on that on a future show. I know I asked you some probing questions, and some are difficult. They can't be answered so simply. These are things, you know, I get a lot of email about this stuff. Why doesn't the
right.
government tell us? And so I feel I have a responsibility to ask those questions for the people that are just sort of turning on to this whole idea and who are willing to listen. And, you know, it's not all roses and peach blossoms here, if you get my meaning.
Right.
But we can certainly create a new reality out of what's happened. We don't have to make the same mistakes that have been made on our behalf, and in most cases without our knowledge and without our consent. And I know that that the work you're doing, I mean, you can hear it in your voice that your intention is to rise way above that, and you already have.
Yeah, well, thank you. Yeah, I think that together as a community, that we've got a lot of power. And like you said, we've got some amazing adventuresome times ahead.
Yes. With your permission, Alejandro, I'll post some links to your site. And
okay.
If you want, I'll even put the Google video link on my site so that if someone wants to come, are you going to leave that up on your site, or are you going to just change it? Okay.
Yeah, I'll move it to a different section of the site, but yep, I'll always have our archives up. And
okay.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, I want to have people be able to get in touch with you, so they could get a hold of you through MUFON.com as well as PhenomenaTelevision.com.
Yeah.
Correct.
Phenomena Television actually will be probably the easiest way to get a hold of me.
Okay. Very good. Well, I want to thank you for being on the show on such short notice.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you.
Very interesting interview, and I can be intense. I gave you fair warning.
Yeah, that's great. Hey, it's got to be challenging if it's worth doing, I think.
Yeah, and we're creating the foundation for the new listeners here. As well as, you know, we're reemphasizing some things that other folks know about. So, you know, they know we're not trying to insult anyone's intelligence, that we're really hitting this issue. It's this isn't the Fox News network. This is BBS.com. So I want to thank you, Alejandro Rojas, for being on Evident Footprints, and I look forward to having you back again soon. Say hello to Rick for me when you talk to him.
Will do.
And maybe we can open up some doors to the Travis Walton case next time you visit with us.
That sounds great. He's a great guy, and it's a fascinating case.
Yes, it is. I read the books on it, and I even saw him on the Jerry Springer Show, if you can believe that. That was something. That was an event. I think he was probably praying he'd get abducted again after that show.
I bet.
Okay, you have a good night, Alejandro.
You too.
All right. Folks, you've been listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and our special guest this evening was Alejandro Rojas. He will be with us at a time in the hopefully near future. And in the meantime, I invite you to come back again tomorrow night, same time, same place, here on BBSRadio.com. In the meantime, peace, love, and light, and have a very good night.